bon sens. Ils n'ont changé. Hell is melting with me. It's got to be perfect. It's got to be worth it. Yeah. Too many people.
Fred, hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Tim?
Well, I'm asking with a reason, because this week our perfect song thing is the perfect song for coming out of hospital. And you did come out of hospital recently. So, you know, there's a story there.
Well, I wasn't long in a couple of hours because they had to cut away a piece of cancerous skin. It's called basal cancer and it doesn't spread. So once they've taken the bit out, you're fine. But the problem was that it was very close to my eye, sort of between the bridge of my nose and my eye. And there's still a plaster here, which I have to wear for 3 months and put a bit of anti-inflammatory every day, twice a day. Anyway, so I was in the hospital for a couple of hours. The whole operation took an hour.
Too many details here.
Under anesthetic, but not really. So you could still hear and talk. And I heard. The guy who did the anesthetic flirting with his assistant,
okay,
who could have been a rock and roll nurse in my view, but okay. Anyway, so that was a bit strange. But then then the thing kicked in and I lost where the flirtation went. But I came out. I mean, I looked a mess when I just came out of the hospital, but now I'm almost like back to normal because it's been 2 weeks since they removed the plasters and the dressing and everything. And, you know, I hardly ever been in my life in a hospital, I realized.
Right.
I never spent a single night, I think, in a hospital, ever. You?
So, yeah, just a couple of nights here and there. So, but I'm very interested in this flirtation thing. Were you jealous of your inability to flirt with the doctor?
It's a bit like the dentist issue. You know, I once had a very beautiful dentist in Johannesburg, and she was Serbian, I think, from Yugoslavia at the time. But you lay there with your mouth open, and she looks into your nostrils. And you think, no, that the flirtation is not going to happen here and now. So this assistant, she was quite pretty as far as I can remember. And
right.
I was a bit, I was a bit jealous. I mean, you're there like immobile, dressed in this very funny thing that they put around you and they tie it. And I mean, you look like an idiot, basically. You know, that blue dress with your bare back sticking out and your underpants and too many details now. So you basically want to disappear and you think, no, I don't want to know about these flirtations here.
Okay. Well, what have you been listening to recently?
Well, I write for a Dutch music magazine. It's called Platenblad, which means record magazine. And it's sort of like a small independent publication. I think they sell about 1,000 copies. It comes out 8 times a year. So let's say every 6 weeks. And all the critics were invited to send their top 10 of the year. And I always go through them because it's interesting because there's a lot of stuff I haven't heard. And the editor of the magazine had a band called The Third Mind. And he always chooses at least 30 records, whereas everybody else chooses 10. But it's his prerogative to choose as many as he wants. So he had 30. And 10 reissues and 10 jazz albums. So in the end, he had about 50. So I thought, because he mentioned somebody else who also put him to that band, The Third Mind. And, you know, it's also The Third Mind was a book by William Burroughs and one of his mates. And it was about how two people together create a third mind, like us two, because you come up with solutions and ideas that you wouldn't come up with by yourself. That was the basic idea of The Third Mind. So I listened to this album. It's on Spotify. It's the second album. I listened to the first one as well, which didn't really do much for me. But the second one, I really, really enjoyed. But you have to be in the mood for it. It's got very long, meandering guitar solos. It's very sort of Grateful Dead, 1968 kind of vibe. And I read that they were inspired. The guy, the main guy, used to be in a band called The Blasters. And he'd been reading a Miles Davis biography where Miles, in the Electric period, talked about the way they made those songs. And it was basically improvisations, long improvisations, that then they would later edit and cut into proper tracks, because you can't really call them songs. And that's what they did with this band as well. And in a way, it's a bit of a supergroup of guys who were big in the late 90s, early 2000s, the Blasters. There was a band called Cracker, a few other bands. And then they have a female singer who's a bit raspy, more raspy than Grace Slick of the Jefferson Airplane, but she's got an incredible voice. And all but one of their songs were covers. But you don't so recognize them because they go into these long meandering guitar solos. So okay. It's a double album on vinyl. It's long, but it's, you know, once you're in the mood, you'll be in that mood.
Okay, let's have a listen. Yeah, it's fabulous. I get the Grace Slick sort of comparison. There's a lot of that era.
Do you like it?
Yeah, very much. It's fabulous. Yeah.
I think this was a Gene Clark cover. Gene Clark, who was in the Byrds, one of the main songwriters in the Byrds. Beautiful songs he wrote.
Yeah.
This is one of them. And yours?
I just kind of stumbled on this person, but, you know, as usual, she's been around for quite a while. I mean, she's only got one full album out. Her name's Ethel Kane. But when I read up on her, the description was she's inspired by Christian music and Gregorian chant, and she's focused on nostalgic Southern Gothic and writes ambient indie rock in a kind of folk style. And if you say the words ambient indie rock folk style to me, I'm in. So, yeah, I think this
and
is
now,
her.
How did you stumble upon her?
Actually, I stumbled on her because I've been listening to Florence and the Machine, and she did a cover of a song with Florence Welch, and it's just beautiful. But anyway, this is her most popular song. It's called American Teenager. Yeah, you can see you can hear the kind of, you know, the country mixed with gothic, mixed with et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's quite a good mix.
I didn't hear the ambient, I didn't hear the goth, and I didn't hear the darkness. It sounded a bit pompous to me, like it was very full. I expected some sort of esoteric sounds. It's quite a jubilant song, you know, like, hey, let's all get together, man.
I think it's very much her pop song. Her other songs, you'll definitely get that feel. But anyway,
the one I chose last week had all that you just
that is true.
Mentioned. And you dismissed
right.
her.
I don't think I
Faye dismissed Wolf. Her. You dismissed her. Anyway, let's get to the hospitals.
Get on. Yeah. Okay, so this is your first song. Let's just play it. Hold out your arm, boys. We'll speak at your tongue.
That's right. That was the New York Dolls with Pills. Now, several things I didn't realize. I knew the song from way back. It came out in, I think, 74 or something. It was on their first album. And the Famous were having Johnny Thunders on guitar, who was one of the most sad rock and roll junkies that we ever had. He was one of those guys who tried to emulate Keith Richards, but had to bow out way before Keith did. But the song, I never realized that it's a cover of a Bo Diddley song, which I know that there was a punk band called The Lurkers who did it, and I thought they covered the New York Dolls. No. New York Dolls covered Bo Diddley, which is a completely different version, I must say. And also, I thought it was about, you know, like one of those adolescent fantasies where you're, you know, there's a lot of sort of slightly tricky plays on nurses treating you in a hospital, and it's all a bit erotic, etc. And I thought this song was about that. But then I realized it's actually a metaphor. The rock and roll nurse is the dealer, basically, who provides the drugs if you're living in this rock and roll world. So they got pills for this, pills for that, a little shot of something to keep you going. So it's basically a song about junkies. And that, you know, that suits Johnny Thunders, of course, very well. Because after he split from the Dolls, after the Dolls split, he wanted to form a new band, and they were going to call themselves The Junkies, which the record company thought wasn't a great idea. So they became Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers. But it's still a great song, and I love it. It's a real raunchy rock and roll, sort of a bit Stonesy. He's got a good voice, David Johansen. And, you know, it's sharp and to the point, and it's about rock and roll, not so much about hospitals.
I can see why you're choosing it, because his fantasy about the, you know, rock and roll nurse sounds like it was slightly akin to your fantasy about your rock and
exactly.
roll.
Exactly. Yes. That's what made me think of it. Yes. And may I add one thing to our general information about our podcast is that I think also you, I don't Google songs. So I don't Google hospital plus songs. So I use only my memory. That's basically it. So that's where we draw from.
So do I Google songs? I don't think so, but I might have. I also don't use ChatGPT on songs, which maybe I should. You know, maybe that would give you the whole history. Anyway, okay, yeah,
don't
no,
have
great.
To second guess.
So my song is by Florence and the Machine that I was mentioning earlier. I just think Florence Welch is just fantastic. She's a marvelous singer. She has this enormous flowing red hair, and she looks kind of completely pre-Raphaelite, and she sings in a kind of pre-Raphaelite way and about, you know, death and love, and it's just, she's just completely intoxicating. Anyway, this is off their latest album, which I really thought was just brilliant, and it seems to have sold nothing. But, you know, I think they are one of the bands that sort of creep up on you. And this is the last track on the album. The album's called Dance Fever, and it's called Morning Elvis. And I just liked it because it's about going into hospital and surviving. So it's very much on our theme, obviously. Tell me what you think. Here we go.
Graceland. The bathroom tiles were cool against my head. I pressed my forehead to the floor and prayed for a trapdoor. I've been here many times before, but I've never made it to Graceland. And if I make it to the morning, I should have come with a warning. And if I make it to the stage, I'll show you what it means to be safe.
Now, that's a lot better than that other one you played that you'd been listening to. I really like this. She's got a beautiful voice. And I like the sound. You know, it's got space, whereas the other one was sort of pumped full of sounds. Like there was no breathing space. Here, there's a lot of breathing space. And also, yeah, I mean, it's a snippet. I didn't know the song before you played it, but it makes you want to listen to it and sort of understand the references to Elvis and to Graceland. Maybe you can explain them. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not aware that she's explained it sort of in detail. But the song, it was written prior to COVID, and I suspect what happened was that she got COVID and ended up in hospital. Sent the band on and told them that, you know, if she makes it to the stage, she's been saved. So it was, you know, it was just about being sick and the as far as you can tell. Maybe there's some subtle reference to junkies in there that I'm not reading, but it's that's more or less what it sounds like.
No, but great. Say, good choice.
Okay. All right. The next one is your choice. Here we go.
Can lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful.
Okay, I think I've heard that song before somewhere.
I must tell you, I'm not a huge U2 fan, but I do like them. And I like their very early period. I like their middle period when they started experimenting. And then I sort of lost track of them a bit. Then this album came out, called again, All That You Can Leave Behind. It's sort of an uplifting song, you know, it's like life is shit, yes. But then you realize the weather is great and you walk around, you see beautiful people, you have a nice cup of coffee, you enjoy small things in life, and it's not as bad as you think it is. But the reason I chose it is that around that time, it must have been late 2000, my father went to hospital with a triple bypass and a new valve. And on the way to, we took him to the hospital, which I lived in Rotterdam at the time. And the hospital was somewhere about an hour's drive from Rotterdam. And I played music in the car. And it was that U2 album, All That You Can Leave Behind. And that song, Beautiful Day, because you know, you're worried. The man was in his late 70s and he was frail. And a triple bypass and a new valve is not nothing. So it was a song that sort of kept me going. And 2 days later, you know, these things go very, very quickly. Yeah, you're in the neck one day and out 2 days later or one day later. I played that song again and he was in the car with me, sort of starting to recover, I guess. And Beautiful Day reminds me of that moment, you know, where somebody can die, but he comes out alive. And it was a beautiful day. It was a sunny day in Rotterdam. And we drove over the bridge, over the river, and it sort of rang the perfect bell.
Yeah, no. The one thing that you feel after you come out of hospital is relief. You know, there's and just everything, the smallest things, the sunlight, the just very familiar experiences suddenly have a completely new quality. Mm. You wonder why it is that you just took all of that for granted. Anyway, yeah, no. So,
what was really strange, he sat next to me in the car, and he kept reading out loud the advertisements along the road, you know, like moving company, call. And it was sort of for him to refamiliarize him with life, I guess, because you're dead for, you know, a short while when they do all that stuff on your heart. So it was really strange. I thought, why is he doing this? But it was like, wow, I came out of this alive. His sort of revelation.
Talking about staying alive, how about this?
You can't tell by the way I use my voice. I'm a woman's man. No time to talk. Music loud, women walk, walking, kicked around. It's how I was born. Never thought of it. I don't hate. And you may look the other.
Okay, so now that's an extremely obvious song about, you know, but there's a subtlety to it that you may or may not know. And that is, did you know that the song was recorded at 104 beats per minute, which is exactly the tempo associated with CPR?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. On purpose?
I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, I think 104 beats per minute, I mean, that's pretty much, you know, in the danceable zone. You know, it's a kind of basically
danceable. I know a lot of those DJs did research into beats per minute and the heart rate and how you sort of felt best, etc. So they may have done something like that as well.
Yeah. But anyway, now you know, if you ever have to do CPR, all you do is just
sing Stay Alive. You know, this song, it came out in, was it 77 or somewhere?
77, yeah.
Yeah, it was from Saturday Night Fever, right? Sure. And at the time, we were punk rockers, not allowed to even listen to this song because it was vile. It was disco. It was the enemy. Because in those days, it was punk rock and disco, and the two were supposed to hate each other. And I went to see Saturday Night Fever, and I thought it was actually quite a good and interesting film. And later on, I you know, when the song comes up, I really like it. But, you know, in the time, I would never, ever admit liking the Bee Gees in that period. Old period, fine, but not that period.
No. It's made more interesting by the fact that it is, you know, it was massively, massively popular and also absolutely reviled by the critics, by, you know, by everybody who you know, had a semblance of self-respect, would hate the song and tell everybody. And you can sort of tell why. I mean, the falsetto singing, very pretty, but also kind of stilted and stylized. But still, it was a Billboard Top 40 song for, like, you know, weeks on end. It's the other interesting thing about it was the Bee Gees were major hit makers right up to that point, right? They never got another number one single. Actually, I think there was one. One of them did in one of the solo albums that followed it. But the Bee Gees' reputation just completely imploded because actually disco was declining by the time the movie came out. Mm-hmm. And they were very associated with it. I remember seeing them ages afterwards saying that, you know, if you look at the record, there's only two songs on the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack that are by the Bee Gees, and neither of them are really disco songs. Actually, Staying Alive is elements of R&B in it. Anyway, it was very sad for some very extraordinary good songwriters. And you can tell they were brilliant songwriters because, you know, even though they were persona non grata for years afterwards, they kept on writing songs for other singers. And just the hit after hit after hit. So, you know, there was a whole bunch of songs for Barbara Streisand, Islands in the Stream for Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton, A Chain Reaction for Diana Ross. They even wrote a number one country song called Rest Your Love on Me, which Conway Twitty recorded.
I didn't know that.
It's incredible. It's an amazing story behind the song.
You do know about Disco Demolition Night, which happened on the 12th of July, 1979. At the Comiskey Park in Chicago, Illinois. And there was some guy, they hated disco. These were like American hard rockers, you know, guys who liked Ted Nugent and Foghat and all those bands, Grand Funk Railroad. And they saw disco as a vile. You know, there was also a lot of racism and homophobia involved in the hatred for disco. Because it started out in black clubs by the gay community. And so they had a big gathering, I think, before a football match, between the White Sox and the Detroit Tigers, where they burned thousands and thousands of disco records in the stadium and sort of heralding the end of disco for them, which I didn't so know about it. I heard about it in the podcast and I thought how petty and impossibly sad is that. I mean, Hitler burned books, in Chicago, they burn disco records. It's like something where you don't want to go ever.
No, I know.
The Bee Gees were responsible for that because they made it so big.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it was a sort of odd genre because it was hated both by the kind of, if you could call it, the right wing of pop music, hard rock, and also the left wing of the just punk at the same time. You know, so it was hated by two groups of people who would normally hate each other.
Find a common enemy.
It has kind of, you know, it's had its last laugh, I think, because it's still very present. I still feel disco in quite a lot of R&B.
And in house music.
And house music, ambient.
But also in electronic music. I mean, people like Brian Eno and Kraftwerk heard Giorgio Moroder and I Feel Love, you know, Donna Summer song, and they were totally captivated by that rhythm, and that which apparently was a mistake, which they then made to good use. But also there's whole arguments where people say disco is actually much more important in the long run than punk rock, which is probably true in a way.
Ooh, big concession there. We might have to discuss that in more detail. Anyway, here's your third song.
Back into your life. I can't stand what you do. I'm in love with your eyes. And when you get out of the dating bar, I'll be here to get back into your life. I can't stand what you do. I'm in love with your eyes. Oh, I can't stand what you do. Sometimes I can't stand you. And it makes me think about me, that I'm involved with you. I'm in love with this power that shows through in your eyes.
So we've been listening to a snippet of a song called Hospital by a band called The Modern Lovers, which was Jonathan Richman's first band. They had a big hit with Egyptian reggae around the time when punk came around, which was an instrumental. But they had made an album before that, because later on Jonathan Richman became sort of like a naive, childlike figure almost. Bam, 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 go the honeybees, tweedly, deedly, dee, go the birds. But the first album with The Modern Lovers was a sort of extension of The Velvet Underground, and it always got rave reviews, and it is one of those underground albums that everybody's supposed to have. And I bought it a bit later on. I loved it. There's that famous song Roadrunner, you know, Roadrunner, Roadrunner, going 50 miles an hour. And then I think there's the song Pablo Picasso Was Never Called an Asshole. And there was one slow track on it, and that was Hospital. And I always found it a fascinating track. It's sort of built around a slow keyboard little thing. And he sings it in a very tender way. And it starts with, when you get out of the hospital, let me get back into your life. I can't stand what you do. I'm in love with your eyes. It's a very mysterious song. And at the time, I always thought it was like a love song, which I think it is, but it's a totally obsessive love song. And it's basically about a stalker who goes to the street where this girl, she's referenced as a girl, lives, and walks around the streets there and goes to the suburbs where she lives. And there's very strange phrases. I mean, you try to imagine the story. You think this girl has been in the hospital, possibly for nervous breakdown perhaps or something. And she comes out and there's the stalker again. And it's quite a spooky song. And when I really started reading the lyrics, it lost some of its, let's say, romantic qualities.
Yes.
But it's a great song. It's got strange tempo changes. And I mean, it's a song of passion and of unrequited love, but in such a frustrated way that it makes you a bit scared.
Okay. Yeah, no, I thought it was a great song. I thought it was interesting. I've never heard it before. It was so interesting. I thought it was modern, though. I thought it came out very recently.
No, mid-70s, I think, 76 or something, the album came out. Wow. And on keyboards, it had Jerry Harrison, who then started playing for the Talking Heads after that.
Yes.
And as somebody mentioned on one of the websites, is that first he had to play this song, Hospital, and then straight he went to Psycho Killer after that, which is quite a nice, to put it that way. Sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, now my last song is listen. Okay, I know you hate them, but I was just charmed by the backstory. Here's the song.
I used to roll the dice, feel the fear in my enemy's eyes. Listen as the crowd would sing. Now the old king's dead, long live the king. One minute I held the key, next the walls were closed on me, and I discovered that my castle stand upon pillars of salt and pillars of sand.
So, you know, the backstory of the song, you probably know they were playing in Mexico, and they went to one of the galleries there. And in the gallery, there was a painting by Frida Kahlo of watermelons. And on one of the watermelons was just written, Viva la Vida. And anyway, so then they went and, you know, wrote the song about this little phrase, which means... long live life. And it was very poignant, because Frida Kahlo died 8 days after she'd finished that painting. And even at that point, she was still thinking about loving life. You know, she spent most of her life in hospitals. You know, obviously when you come out of hospital, as we were saying before, you know, you're just in love with life. So I thought it was appropriate. But okay, lay into me here. Tell me why Coldplay are the worst thing that's ever happened to music, and the song is not appropriate.
I actually came around a bit with Coldplay, because some of their later albums I admit to quite liking, even like the first album. But it's you know, they sounded like a sort of easy commercial version of Radiohead for a while.
Right.
And okay. And I couldn't stand the guy, the singer.
Yes,
but later on, you know, one of my ultimate music heroes is Brian Eno, who also had a hand in that U2 song, by the way. But he produced a couple of albums and played on some albums of Coldplay. So then I realized there must be something good about Coldplay. And I did listen to them. And I actually, you know, when I find cheap CDs of Coldplay, I will buy them. This song doesn't really do it for me. It's a bit, you know, Vida la Vida, Viva la Vida. Even the title would put me off. But in general, I don't so mind Coldplay. This song, however.
Okay. I mean, there's a couple of interesting things about the song. And one of them is, you know, for a song that is about loving life, it's got the weirdest lyrics. You know, the chorus is, I hear Jerusalem bells are ringing. Roman cavalry choirs are singing. Be my mirror, my sword, my shield, my missionaries in a foreign land. For some reason I can't explain. Once you've gone, there was never an honest word. And that was when I ruled the world. I mean, what is that?
Was he still with his Gwyneth Paltrow then or not?
I don't know. I mean, I think so, actually. And you know, the other interesting thing about the song is that they're by far their biggest seller. It also has it has this very modern chord structure, and I don't know what to make of it. This is a four chord rotating sequence, which you hear in quite often now in popular songs. It's these four chord rotating sequences, you know, and usually there's an off chord thrown in. So there'll be a kind of minor, you know, sometimes augmented, you know what I mean? The song a little bit of a bit of tension, but you know, the majority of it is, you know, adheres to the three chord rule, you know. So, but yeah, I think he's just a little bit more interesting than he seems, and I've always liked Coldplay. I just think that there's something about the songwriter's art that you just have to respect.
Yeah, no, they know how to write a good pop tune. That is
yes,
sure.
Yeah.
Slightly, I would say, disco almost, but not tongue in cheek like Blur could do. You know, Boys and Girls. Yeah. There was a tongue in cheek disco. This is like, let's write a hit single, and they did it.
Well, he wrote it very quickly, as he writes a lot of his songs very quickly. And
it's from 2008, I saw. So I don't know if he was still. I think he was still with Gwyneth then, wasn't he?
Does it make? Yeah, it was. Wasn't there an album after that that was really the breakup album? Anyway, okay. So now we've heard six possibilities about what is the perfect song for coming out of the hospital. What are you gonna plug for as your?
Initially, I was gonna say "Hospital" by the Modern Lovers, but when I really read those lyrics, I thought, no, that's too creepy. Then I thought "Rock and Roll Nurse" pills, but then I thought, no, it's about drugs. It's about a dealer, basically. Right. The nurse is not somebody who treats you in the hospital. The nurse is the guy who supplies you with drugs. So my personal choice out of my songs would be the U2 song.
Yes.
Out of your songs, it would be... I liked the Machine one. I mean, this Coldplay is a definite no for me. Staying Alive is a fun song. But it doesn't really suit the hospital thing, apart from the 104 beat per minute. So for me, it's between the Machine and the
U2.
The U2 song.
Yeah, I think actually I agree with you really completely. I mean, I actually love the Pill song. I think it's a fabulous rendition, kind of fun. I think, I mean, you know, it's what you read into it, right? I mean, maybe it is a song about, you know, sort of drug nurse, but you could read it as a, you know, a song about nurses. Well,
I do like the music. You know, it's very sort of, you come out of the hospital and you say, through my head, rock and roll, nurse going through my head, etc. It does work. You know, you feel alive again. So maybe you should go for the New York Dolls.
No, I just think that when you put all of the songs next to each other, the U2 song just does jump out. And I liked your story about your father. It's made it more relevant to me. So, and I do think it's a fantastic song. So I think
it is.
The perfect song for coming out of hospital is U2, A Beautiful Day. All righty. So what are we going to talk about next week?
Well, next week, Tim, I'm going to get a visitor, not next week, but the week after, I think. And it's it's an old friend of mine from university days. And he's always a bit patronizing about me and my music. He always used to say, well, Fred, you used to like Three Guys from Birmingham while I was listening to John Coltrane and Frank Sinatra. So we're going to go on a road trip and I'm driving in my car, and there's my CD player. So the question is, what kind of music am I going to play? Because I know he's going to say, Fred, could we be without music for a while, maybe? You know, those kind of comments. So it's going to be the perfect song for driving with somebody who doesn't like your music.
Okay. Oh, that's an excellent one. All right. That sounds like fun. We will meet again next week. We are, of course, interested in whether you agree with our choices, disagree with our choices, whether you have other choices. Please do let us know in the comments. Our email address is there. We are on Instagram and, you know, all of the other stuff. So do follow us and let us know. This is an exercise in really discussing music more than, you know, finding the perfect song. Well, it is about finding the perfect song. It's about both. Anyway, look after yourself over the next week, Fred. Let's go out with...
see you later.
Beautiful day.
Bye.
A hand in return for grace. So beautiful.